Thank you, Carol. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lorna, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. And at one point during the when we start the meditation, I wonder if some of you would leap up and open the doors so that we don't hear this click, click, click when we are sitting. But this is the format that I'm going to follow this morning. I'm going to give a meditation instruction, and then I'm going to lead us through a half-hour sit. Half an hour? Oh, no. Well, what's the use of doing it if we don't do it, right? So I'm leading you through a half-hour sit, and then there'll be 15 minutes afterwards to if you have any questions. And the first question should not be, why do you have pink in your hair? All right. I'll tell you, I have pink in my hair because I'm very holy. That's when you get very holy, somehow you get pink in your hair. Anyway, so let's talk about meditation. Let's talk about, and we titled this No Frills Meditation. And that's the sort of meditation I follow. I follow, I practice a meditation, some of you probably are familiar with it, called Vipassana. And Vipassana is a Pali word. Pali is the ancient language of the Buddha. And it's it means insight, to gain insight. And that is really what we as recovering alcoholics want to be. We want to have insight. I mean, that first insight of, oh my God, I drink. It's drinking that's the cause of my problems. It's not my relationship or my boss or whatever. It's drinking. So that's a major insight for us. I feel that most alcoholics think that unless their meditation is akin to an acid trip, they're not doing it right. You know? Unless they feel that somehow they're in another dimension, that it's not a good meditation. And meditation is not, there's such a lot of stuff going around, the meditation is not a practice to get us into another place. It's a practice to get us into this one, to get us here in this moment. It's not out there, it's an in here. And that is it. That's why we sit. That's why we meditate, to feel this present. And most of us want to alter the present in some way or the other. Whether, especially for people like us, we don't want to sit with what we've done or who we are or anything like that, but it goes into other areas. We don't like the temperature in the room. We're constantly, you know, in the summer we keep it so damn cold, in the winter we're dying of the heat inside. We're constantly wanting to adjust things. I mean, I rarely sit down for a meal without smothering it in Tabasco sauce. You know, I love my food very hot. And so just in that minor way, there's this dissatisfaction with how it is, how the world is presented to me. Can I not change it somehow? And you know, I don't want you to get up in arms or thing, but you know, when we talk about, I was talking to my friend here, Janice, this morning at breakfast, and I was saying about going to Al-Anon. You know, I was propelled into Al-Anon. Most people go in because they're dealing with the relationship. I was propelled into Al-Anon because I was sick to death of myself. You know, I was the significant other I was living with. And I found myself doing the same thing over and over again. I was the same person. The other players, the relationships, you know, whether they be employment or romance or family, whatever, all those players changed. And I was always the one at the scene of the crime. You know, I was always there. So I wanted to, you know, the Al-Anons know about change. They don't necessarily be able to do it that well, but they certainly have the key to doing it. And but I can't change unless I look at myself, unless I really see myself. And you know, in our hiddenmost hearts, that when we talk about we're working on a relationship, we can kiss that relationship goodbye. You know, when we say we're working on it, it means subtly, you change. If you don't change, if you change, I will be happy. If you amend that, you know, I will be whatever. You know, if you stop wearing that outfit, I'll be very happy. If you part your hair on the other side, you know, something about you is making me miserable. And we know that we can know that unless I change myself, I won't see it any differently. And I cannot change myself until I see myself. So, these are some things about what meditation is and is not. As far, you know, I always say there are 8 million stories in the Naked City. This is just one of them. So, people will say, well, why is it important? We do all these other steps. We're very intense about doing a fourth step. Must do a fourth step and then a fifth step. And we must make that list and we must make those amends and la, 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 la. And we must pray. We've got to pray. But meditation? They'll say, well, I tried that once, but I can't keep my mind still. Oh, really? How fascinating. You can't keep your mind still? People are sitting in caves for 40 years trying to keep their mind still. You know, the Buddha said it is easier to defeat an army of 30,000 single-handedly with one's hands tied behind one's back than it is to control the mind. But it is possible. It is possible. And we are a group and a fellowship of proving the impossibility of things. You know, we, all of us say, you can't, you know, we listen to stories about where people have come from and what, where they are now. So it is possible to train the mind. This is, people will say, well, I can't stop thinking. Well, you know, the natural function of the eyes is to see. When my eyes are open, I see. The mind might decide that it wants to read the newspaper. So the eyes will focus on the print on the newspaper. It doesn't mean to say that everything else in my surrounds are gone. I might be looking at you and I'm concentrated on you, but it doesn't mean to say I can't see everyone else and the chairs and the lights, and I'm aware that there are other things in the room, but I've decided to look at you. So the natural function of the eyes is to see. I can't say to my eyes, all right, just look at Susie and eliminate everything else. It can't. I can't say when my eyes are open, don't see anything. The eyes see. That's what they do. The ears, the natural function of the ear is to hear. Now you're listening to my voice, so you're paying attention and you're hearing what I'm saying. It doesn't mean to say that you can't hear ambient noises in the room, like the people coughing or shuffling or stuff going on in the hallway. But you've made your mind up to listen to this. And the natural function of the mind is to think. It's like a supersonic computer. It thinks. And this is my experience. You know, I sit down and I decide that I'm going to concentrate on my breath. I take an in-breath, and by the out-breath, I'm redecorating the apartment. Or I'm making a list of what I'm going to do as soon as this is over. The mind plans about future, or it redoes the past. And, you know, we're sitting there and we're having a conversation with our mother that we had 10 years ago, or something or the other. We're redoing something in the mind. And the mind can, like, it's immense. We can sit down and have very loving, wonderful thoughts, and nanoseconds later, we're having revenge and, you know, chaos and murder, and then we're having, you know, springtime and that, and where we're going to go on our holidays, and the romance that's coming. I mean, it's in, there's, a meditation teacher said once, how did he put it? He said, the mind has no class. Do you know, it's like all over the place. And it's like, there's a tendency, one of the greatest instructions I can give you and that's given to me over and over again is never judge your meditation. Never judge it. We can decide we're going to sit for half an hour, and at the end of that half hour, if we have these wonderful, peaceful thoughts and wonderful, peaceful time, and the body is still and the mind is quiet, we'll think, that was a good meditation. And then if we're sitting and the mind is all over the place and you're constantly bringing it back, you'll think to yourself, that wasn't very good. You know, my mind was all over the place. Don't judge it. That it's good that you notice that your mind was all over the place. It's good. That is the meditation that you saw that, that it was all over the place. You know, when they, and it's it's a constant adjustment. When, if you have a two-year-old child, the mind is like a two-year-old child, and that two-year-old child is crawling towards the fire, you don't say, I've pulled that kid back so many times from the fire. you know, let it burn. So, you know, it's you lovingly, you might get fed up, but you lovingly keep pulling that child back and back and back so that it will become an adult and it will grow. And it's the same with the mind too. It's training. They call it a practice. And I, for myself, I call my meditation blue collar work. You know, I do not think to myself, I punch in and I punch out. In my home, I have a kitchen timer, you know, one of those things that goes tick, 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 tick. And I live in New York, so I live in a place the size of a shoebox. And I keep the timer in the bathroom where I can't hear it going tick, tick, tick. And I have my cushion in my bedroom. And there is no position more spiritual than another. You know, it's not more spiritual to sit cross-legged on the floor than it is to sit in a chair. When I lead meditation seminars, I always sit in a chair. Although in my own practice, I sit on the floor. And then, some people like to sit on a bench, you know, with a bench underneath their butt, that sort of thing. But the only thing is to try and keep the body relatively still. Don't futz. You know, once we've got a position, the body is always going to say, oh, you know, you'd be a little more comfortable if you sort of changed and got yourself right. Go through the irritation and the pain of not changing it, of sitting still. You know, there are going to be times when you sneeze or you, or whatever. It's not a rigid thing, but to be aware that you don't need to constantly be changing. This thing with meditation, I don't say to myself, oh, do I feel like brushing my teeth? Do I not? Shall I floss? Shall I not? I don't know. I don't feel. It wasn't a very good floss. I don't think. you know, I'm no good at. I'm really no good at flossing. You know, the thing is, if I don't floss my teeth, the teeth are not rebelling against me. The teeth are not, don't have a personality. The teeth will just rot and fall out. So I don't think about, do I feel like it? Do I like it? It's the same thing with meetings. I floss my teeth. And if I want to have a life that is, you know, fairly high, fairly centered and fairly in control is not the right word, but it's a feeling of that, then I have to meditate. I have to keep this thing at bay. You know, I'm tonight's speaker, and I will tell a story about how I'm 33 years sober at the moment, and when I was 32 years sober, I almost drank again. And you know, that thing of, I must stay attentive, especially since I'm an alcoholic, to stay attentive. And I wasn't quite attentive enough to my circumstances. And, you know, like us all, I have a disease that's doing push-ups in the hallway. So it's imperative for me that I watch my life closely. And I'm a great 10th step advocate. You know, I love the 10th step, making amends, looking at my day, seeing where I could have done better or where I was people-pleasing or something like that. So I've already spoken more than the 15 minutes I said I would, and it's enough. You know, it's just enough to get going. I will lead us through this meditation. I will talk, and can you all hear me if I speak like this? Because I need to sit myself. Is this all right? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Pay attention. All right. Well, maybe I'll keep doing the tape while I give the instruction meditation. It's best to sit up. A chair is really fabulous. So put your butt right at the crease of the chair, all right, so that your back is just a little way away from the back, that you're not leaning against the chair, that you're slightly pushed forward. And the whole idea is that we are alert and awake. It's like those guards outside Buckingham Palace. You're alert but tranquil. So, feet flat on the floor, and the hands can be any way, you know, clasped on your lap, they can be flat on your knees, they can be anywhere, as long as they feel still and peaceful. So the body is erect and in an attitude of listening and aware, tranquil alertness. All right? So, close the eyes. And do a scan of your body. Starting at your head. Scan down through your body. Maybe someone wants to shut that back door. And just feel yourself sitting on the chair. Be here on this chair. There's nothing else going on in your world except you're sitting on the chair. If this was the last moment of your life, this is the culmination of your life, is sitting here. This is where all your life has brought you. Don't fidget. Sit still. take your attention to your brow. Make sure your brow is spacious and soft. Keep the brow holy. Keep your eyes soft and lightly closed, gentle. The jaw relaxed. The lips gently resting on each other. Your shoulders wide, expanded. Think of yourself in a receiving attitude. The eyes soft. Keep those eyes very soft. Now bring the mind to your nostrils. And feel the air going in and out of your nose. Don't force it in any way. Just watch what it does. Be aware of the breath in your nostrils. God said, I am closer to you than the breath in your nostrils. And this very intimate thing that we do all day long, we take no notice of it. We only notice it when we don't have it. It's the very thing that sustains my life. And for the most part, I'm totally unaware of it. So become aware and grateful for this breath and the next one. And just stay aware of the breath in your nostrils and the gentleness of your hands resting miles down in your lap. The rhythm of your life force. When you were born, you took an in-breath, and one day you will exhale and not inhale again. If the mind is planning, just tell it you don't want to do that right now. You want to do this. Meditation is not passive. It's a dynamic act that you choose to participate in. It's energetic. And requires some discipline. It takes us out of our normal comfort zone. Keep the eyes shut. Think of your eyes as being like a horizon on the expanse of your face. Soft and very long. Take your hearing faculty deep within yourself. Listen to your own inner silence, a thunderous sort of silence. Take your listening faculty and let it run out into all the sounds in the room. The buzzing of the conditioner, all the little sounds that the ears can hear. It's all part of what is happening now. Stay with it, stay on board. Bring the mind back. What you're engaged in. This is your life, your one precious life. Don't miss it. Thank you.
the eyes and the lips very soft. Stay present to your experience. If the mind wanders, don't scold it. Just gently come back to what you want to do. You want to focus on your breath. You want to stay here. You want to feel yourself sitting on the chair. Whatever you have to do, stay right here in your life, in this moment. The moment we started this meditation is gone. It's as much in the past as Abraham Lincoln. It's gone forever. We just have this one. And this moment, don't miss it. This is a practice for not missing your life. Do we not suddenly wake up and boom, we're 30, boom, we're 40, 50, and on. And all the years pass away, not paid attention to. And life is so rich. And it's not rich in necessarily the things we do, but it's rich in how we pay attention. Nelson Mandela sat in that cell for 27 years, and his life was very rich. So stay with your life. Stay with this practice. We have 10 minutes remaining. Don't miss it. Your eyes wide and soft. Feel your butt on the chair. Feel the magnificence of your physical self. Gently, gently. But with firmness, bring the mind back to here. in a few minutes, this part of your life will be over. Make sure that these last few minutes are not about longing for it to be over or longing for it to continue. Just right here, right now, in what it is. You have just as much chance for enlightenment now as you did when we started. So stay with it. Don't shortchange yourself. Be as involved with your process all the way through. Your jaw relaxed. Are you here, in the room, sitting on the chair? See if you can imbue your body with a sense of sweetness about yourself. Just a sweetness invading your body. And a thanksgiving for the opportunity to have this chance to pay attention to your life. And remember, again, this is a dynamic act. It is not passive. It is not something we fall into. It's something we show up for. Meditation is very dynamic, and it's a choice. It's not a wafting about on the waves. It's an attention. when the mind is paying attention, it becomes bright. We talk about someone having a bright mind. It shouldn't be forced, it should be trained. Like you would a child. Three more minutes. Relish the stillness in your body. Those eyes very wide and soft, spreading like the horizon across your face. Scan your body once more. Make sure it's alert and attentive. But not rigid. May you be safe and protected from inner and outer harm. May you be free. May you know peace. May you be peaceful and happy. So now we've come to the end of our meditation. Be aware that you're going to open your eyes. So that part of our lives are over. No clinging, no judgments. That's that. That section's gone. Now we get on to the next. And I said, you know, I treat my meditation as blue-collar work. I punch in and I punch out. And when that clock goes off in the bathroom, that's the end of it. I get up, and there's a tendency sometimes to think, oh, I'm having such a great thought. Let me just continue with this plan that I've got. But if any of you were raised Catholic and know about life with the nuns, you know, they live by the bell, and when the bell goes, that's the end of whatever it is they're doing. And so when that bell goes, I finish the meditation. That's what it is for that day. And then I get on about my business. And, you know, it's like a practice. We sit for an hour in a room of AA, and we go out, and that hour is like the yeast in our lives, and that spreads into our lives as a writer. We can't think of when we're sitting on the chair listening to old Joe speak again or whatever, or Susie or whatever. We can't think, oh, this is happening to me. It's just, it's the process of having sat that influences our lives. Now we have a few more minutes, because I know that if you're an alcoholic of my sort, we like things to start on time and end on time. some of you, I will give the commercial, but some of you have asked me about my book, and I have a few copies up here after if someone wants to get it. It's an interesting book. It's all about me. So. If any of you would like to ask a question or comment or anything. Oh, one thing I want to say to you. People will say, I can't concentrate. It's a total lie. Everyone, put a man, I'm being very sexist here, in front of the television of a football game. Yeah. You know, you concentrate. Put most of us in front of the computer screen. And we concentrate. It's like hours slip by. And when we decide to concentrate, we have that faculty to concentrate. But how many of us drive from A to B and we can't recall the drive at all? Can you feel your hands on the wheel? Are you aware? I mean, you're aware that it's a red light, I better stop. But, and we live in a society now where we're not concentrated. We'll have someone right in front of us and we're talking on the cell phone to someone else. You know, our lives are all about multitasking and distraction, and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And, you know, in meditation, also this thing of bringing the mind back, that is it. And eventually, if one gets really good at it, you know, the Dalai Lama practices for 9 hours a day. So if one gets good at it, you can sit and immediately get into that groove of being right here, right now, and the mind, and it can do those. I mean, if you're looking for the highs, you can get them, believe me. You can get those jhanic states, but that's not the thing to go for. But even beyond the jhanic states, there are more and more and more. It never ends. It's like, you know, you think you're, well, when I've got 20 years of sobriety, then I'm really going to have it. And then you get 20 years of sobriety and you think, well, maybe, I don't quite have it yet. Maybe it's never ending, the journey. It's never ending. And when they send a rocket up to the moon, say, they don't go, all right, Cape Canaveral, moon. And they don't go, boom, like that. They can't. They send the rocket up, willy-nilly, and it's a constant thing of adjusting. The computers are adjusting, and those guys down at NASA are adjusting, until it lands where it's supposed to land. And if any of you are pilots, you know that when you fly a plane, you're not flying the plane. You're constantly adjusting and keeping it on course. And that's what it is with meditation. It's a constant adjustment. You can't say, all right, concentrate on my breath. Concentrate. And you stay from here to nirvana. It's impossible. It's like life. You know, do we not have some days that are sweet and wonderful and we feel like making amends and we love our fellow men? And every morning get up and we say, oh, God, I can't. Dan Samantha, I've got to call my mother, and so it's never this set thing, but it's always this like adjusting here, and gradually we realise, oh, you know, my children that never wanted to see me now want me to take care of their children, of my grandchildren. And it's a process. Anyway, I'd love to hear some questions or.
Lorna, I have a question. The guy that I work with in the program is Santi. I really encourage meditation. And somewhere in the 12 and 12 it says that the prayer and the meditation gives us an unshakable foundation for life. And when I encourage that, the first excuse I hear is, where do I get the time to meditate? That is like the number one thing. So I encourage people to start with a 5-minute block of time, and I don't care what you do with it, just save that 5-minute block of time just for you, nothing else, and then expand to 10 and so on. And it doesn't work. If you have any way that I can encourage people to, you know, they're making their schedule, but what do you do? I know the importance of the meditation, but how can I get that across that the time slot is as important as the meditation itself?
Well, I think it's like everything in the program. It's like, you don't want to do it? Do you know, it's like, well, you don't understand. When people come over,
Don't worry about it, I'm sorry.
When people come over to my house, I want to be able to offer them a drink. So I have to keep alcohol in the house. You know, people are going to give excuses all the time. Is that not the constant whine of the alcoholic? I'm different. It's different for me. And, you know, I can tell you something that's going to really... I mean, can we not see when the person walks through the door what's going to happen with their life? We can see them. You know, you saw me 5 miles away coming towards you. And it's like, well, you know, we don't drink, and we go to meetings. Oh, Vonda, but you don't understand. You know, I'm in the art business, and I go to gallery openings, and I have to drink. All right. Well, this is what we do. You know, and I think you can say, in a case like this, when the sponsee calls you, and they're all discombobulated and something like that, I think you can say, well, Alfred, you know, I've been recommending meditation over and over again, but you've decided not to meditate. And I, you know, there's nothing I can do. If you don't want to do it, you don't want to do it, so you're not going to. And I can't talk to you about this higher level because you're not there yet, you know. And you may not be speaking on your cell phone while you're speaking with me. You may not be receiving calls from someone else while your sponsor's talking to you. When you're with me, you must stay with me. And I think just little by little by little by little, training. Please, sir.
My name is Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Dave.
And about 20 years ago, I took a course titled Memory and Concentration. The oddity of the course was that the teacher would have to show up for the medicine.
Very good. And it's the truth, you know, I don't think I'm going to have time to address it all this evening, but this thing of slips, when people have slipped and they come back, there's a tendency in the program to tell them that they have to go back to the beginning. I never do. I never say, oh, you have to count days again, or you have to do that. I think it's such a weight on the returnee's mind. And such a terrible thing that I have to go back. And it's unknown in life to go back. you know, I cannot stand in front of the mirror and say, you know, I really screwed up my 20s. I want to do them again. I want to go back to something. I can't. And to force the returnee to count days, I mean, if they want to, they can do what they have. They can stand on their heads and spit nickels for all I care. I don't care. But I am not going to say, you have to. You have to go back. You have to. First of all, I tell them they may not do any service. They can't read literature. They can't do anything. They have to get into meetings and read the history of AA. They have to become involved in what they're involved in and the magnificence. Because very often people think other things are far more. I'm sponsoring a guy now that picked up after 19 years, and he switched his allegiance from Alcoholics Anonymous to his spiritual practice, because the spiritual practice seemed far juicier than going to meetings and sitting on these chairs and drinking this awful coffee. And he's, you know, the meditation and the practice seemed far like more interesting because he's going through these different levels in this meditation. And he switched his allegiance and he picked up sake, of all things. Can you imagine having a slip on sake? But anyway, so he. But when he came back, he asked me to help him, and I said, you know, you may not, first of all, because you can't date, then you may not do any service, you may not read the literature, you may not do any work on the steps at all. You must, I want you to learn what you're involved in, because this is far juicier than any other practice that I know of. You know, it's far more interesting. And all those other practices I do, you know, for myself, AA is not a bridge back to life. It's a bridge into Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the deep mystery. This is the mystery. And all those other things I do outside, which are wonderful, you know, I need them, I, as Wilson said, you know, it's all very good. But I, it's enhancing this. This is it. Anyway, I'm chatting away. Was there a hand up at the head, please? Yes. Well, I think you can use, for myself, I think you can use the same principle as someone saying, well, you know, what is it going to be like if I stop drinking? What are the benefits of it? And it's like sex. You can't really talk to someone about, you know, look, I'm going to tell you what an orgasm feels like so that you never have to do it, you know? You can't explain it. You can't explain it. You have to experience it. And I think, I think you can keep it simple and say, look, you know, I'm not too sure myself. You know, I can't pontificate about it. I can say, look, I'm not that sure myself. But I know that all the steps are very necessary, and it's to not skip over one. And just because I don't understand it fully, why do I have to understand before I do something? It's a mystical, it's a mystery. And so I don't know what it's going to be like for you. All I know is for me, it adds a deeper dimension to my life. But for you, I don't know. And it's, you know, when we come, when the newcomer comes in, we encourage them not to break their anonymity, not to tell people that they're in the program. And I found myself, you know, if I told someone I was in the program, their reason for me not being in AA sounded far more logical to me than my reasons to be there. And I found myself getting into a total tiz-was trying to explain something I didn't really understand myself. I didn't really know why I was here because I didn't really have a problem. You know, you made me an alcoholic. I wasn't an alcoholic before I came in here. And I was trying to explain this thing that I didn't really get. And I think anonymity really is in place for the newcomer for that reason. Because we don't really get it. We don't really understand why we're not drinking. It's a grace given to us. It's a grace. And for a long time, our lives out there seem far more interesting with our friends, people, places, and things than they do sitting in this meeting night after night. So the individual, and then there comes that moment when they're like, oh, you know, I want to go to AA. I want to. It's great. I love it. My, you know, the whole line up. And I think the same thing with meditation. I would not get into explaining to someone what the benefits of it is going to be. It's not like shopping in Bloomingdale's, for God's sakes. You know, you can buy. I do it. I find it enhances my life and gives my life a deeper, more meaningful resonance and dimension. And it's part of the 12 steps, you know. So. Oh, no, it's a lady.
Hi, I'm Eva. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
I find it very difficult to meditate because I have constant music playing in my head. I mean, it never stops. It's playing even while I'm talking to you.
Don't tell us the tune because we'll all be thinking.
So I find that the only kind of meditation that I can really do is to read the meditation books. You know, while you were sitting there quietly, I'm like, it's going to be over. You know, I apologize for that, but, you know, I don't get it.
Well, you know, you are, madam, I hate to tell you this, it might become as a great shock to you, but you're not unique. And it's loads of us get that, but the fact that you know that you've got music going on in your mind, that's an attention.
Mm-hmm.
That you're attentive to that. You know that that's music going on in your mind. So, and I don't care what you say, it's not constant. You might think it's constant because it seems like a great to you, but there are moments in there. There's moments when, because there was a moment when you thought, when's this going to be over? So that the space, and this, you know, when, it's often described that you're walking down the lane and you see this line in the lane or the path. And it just looks like a line. As you get closer to it, you see that it's moving. And then as you get even closer, you see that it's a snake, actually. And then as you get even closer, you see, no, it's not a snake, it's a line of ants moving across the path. And then you can pick up one of those ants, and you can see it's got little legs and it's got feelers. And then if you really put it under a microscope, you can see what it ate for breakfast that morning. And you can get deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's what it is. It's getting deeper and deeper. Our lives are not this lump. They're far more refined and refined and refined and refined. And we can get deeper and deeper and deeper. We can get on the macro, like, you know, looking at universes, or we can get on the micro, where it comes really down. You've all seen those wonderful things of photographs of nebula in the cosmos, and then you see it reflected in a lizard's eye or something. So so you have, that's what's going on in your mind. And then if you get irritated and you think, oh, when's this going to be over, you can think to yourself, I'm irritated. So irritation is going on in your mind. So you be aware of your irritation. And then it'll pass because you'll think, God, I wish, you know, I'd like to move my leg. And then you think, oh, pain in my... It might appear to you at the moment like it's a block, but it's not. And even in just the tiniest little thing you shared, it's obvious that it's not a block. So persevere. You're doing well. But just never tell anyone the tune. When I go on retreats and someone will, you know, this thing comes up all the time. Like, I can't get this song out of my mind. And the meditation teacher will say, don't tell us what it is. Because it infects the whole retreat. You know? And everyone then got this Beatles song in their mind.
I found it real, real hard for me to meditate upon anything.
And this is what got me into meditation. Upon awakening, asking God to divorce me from self-pity, self-seeking, and dishonesty. And then thinking, God, asking God to give me intuitive thinking for the next 24 hours. And Keith Lewis had a journal, and the journal was about picking goals. And for what you're going to do today, what is the reason for you doing these things today? And what I do, when I get to the part of the intuitive thinking for the next 24 hours, I think of people I'm going to come in contact with. And laying there on my bed, I ask God to send love for me to that person. And then I think about, well, I got to go to work today. And I ask God to help me be the best employee that I can. And I just do pick out those things and try to meditate on them. I've tried over and over to lay there silent and my mind won't silence. So I say, I'm going to ask God, in my meditation, I'm going to lay here, and what my meditation is more or less than a conversation with God. And I want to know what you think of that, because I've been having guys that I sponsor that had the same problem with just quieting their mind. I tell them, if you can't quiet your mind, then make your meditation a time with God. Is that a form of meditation?
It sounds more like prayer. And meditation, and it's fabulous. It's fabulous, and it's obviously, you know, you're very... So, you know, you've got long-term sobriety, and you're, obviously something's right for you. So, but it's a, you know, people say, well, I meditate when I do the dishes. No, you don't. You're not. I mean, you can do the dishes in a meditative way, but it's not the real, thing is sitting down and being quiet. Being with yourself. It's showing up for your life. It's a practice. It's so simple, and people want to complicate. It's a practice for experiencing your life. Not what you're going to do out there. But this moment, you can say, well, I'm lying on the bed, and my head feels like this on the pillow, and this, that, and the other, and I'm thinking about going to work, but I want to think about being right here, right now. And the, you know, the saddest sentence in the Bible, for myself, is, and Jesus passed by. And I often imagine myself in first century Jerusalem and showing up and someone said, Tony, you should have been here a few minutes ago. Jesus just passed by. But I just, you know, and that's really a major part of my story. I missed so much. I just missed out. Then I have this other story to tell you. At one point in my early sobriety, I was meditating within 20 minutes of coming into the program. I didn't know that I drank, but I knew something in me. I don't know how I knew this, but it was a grace given to me. I knew that the key was silence. I knew that the key was an inner journey, and that the power was within me. And I got very rigid about, I want to meditate for 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes at 5 o'clock. And wherever I would take myself off to meditate, right? And I was with a girlfriend one time in her apartment, and it came to, I don't know whether it was the morning or the afternoon, I forget. I got up and, you know, me, I have to do my spiritual practice. So I took myself up to the toilet because there was no other place to go. And I went and sat in the bathroom, and I sat, and then 20 minutes later I came up, and she said, oh, Lorna, there you are. She said, you know, there was a knock on the door, and I opened it, and there was the angel Gabriel asking for you. And I said, you couldn't be disturbed because you were meditating. Other burning desires. I think, you know, as alcohol, she sat on my chairs enough. And so
it's over. Wow.
Right there.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And how much are they?
Oh, she's gonna, yes.
And they're on tape too, on CD?
This is CD, yes. It's 7.5 hours.
And the focus of the book is?
Well, the book has pictures in it, and if you listen to your, things in your car, or you know someone that's blind, I can't tell you.
And that's the book.
It's